Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 69 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about Trumpageddon. Is he bringing on the end of the world or biblical plagues? And basically, this is going to be probably the shortest episode I've ever done. There's several reasons for that. Number one, I want to save up my energy because episode 70 is going to be a prediction episode about Joe Biden's chances against Trump, state by state, break it down. That one might be a little bit longer, so I don't want to tax your patience. But also because it's a very depressing argument that I'm about to make. The idea that Trump may somehow be bringing on the end of the world. I'm half kidding. It's not totally like a conspiracy theory or something that I've created. I want to keep that argument really tight. You know, back when Bush was president, there was all these theories that he was somehow behind 9/11 and everything. And typically, the longer a conspiracy theory is, the more holes that there is in it. But also, it's somewhat of a depressing topic. Just since I did episode 68, there's been four or five major news stories that have broken, all of them bad. We have race riots in Minneapolis because of the killing of George by police that clearly murdered him. I don't think there's any other way to put that. I think that's pretty clear from the videotape and just the fact that his death was just so meaningless and didn't have to happen and was completely avoidable and if only police had done their job correctly. And the fact that even the mayor of Minneapolis has come out and said they killed him. The cop who killed him should be put in jail. And you don't typically hear mayors say that. A lot of times mayors are like, well, we need all the facts to come out. We need to check the body cam footage. But he's come out and pretty unequivocally said this was murder. Hats off to him for saying that, but I can't remember another time that a mayor has come out so forcefully and been like, he should be prosecuted. He's recommended charges to the county attorneys to prosecute this cop. And because of that action by the police, there's been race riots in Minneapolis. They show Minneapolis right now. It looks pretty bad. And I used to live there. That was the last place I lived before Los Angeles. I've lived in New York and Minneapolis and LA and actually technically lived in Minneapolis longer than I did New York. So that's kind of a interesting place that I've lived in quite a bit. But you have that story. You have the story of the cicadas are coming back from the southeast. You have the story of Trump is threatening to shut down Twitter and Facebook by executive action because they're fact-checking his lies. You have the story of there's a mysterious new disease on top of coronavirus that's spreading in New York, mostly to children. Children are more affected by this than anything else. Several children have died. Lots more have been infected by some mysterious new disease that they don't quite get. All we're missing is the blood in the rivers and the raining of frogs. That's all that we're missing from the biblical plague side of things. So let's look at why I think this might be happening. I think Trump possibly made a deal with the devil. And I'm saying this half tongue in cheek because honestly, I'm an agnostic. I don't really believe in all this stuff, but it's an interesting theory. Trump makes a deal with the devil to become the luckiest man on the face of the earth. I mean, his luck is seemingly limitless. Inherits a fortune from his father, an already built real estate empire, but he's somehow able to brand himself as this business genius who created it all from scratch. He bankrupts on multiple casinos, which I didn't know was possible. As I've said before, the business model of a casino is, I give you $20, you give me back 50 cents. It seems like you couldn't lose money. I mean, those are pretty damn good margins. Those are better margins than cosmetics or movie theater popcorn. Like, that's a scam. And yet, he's able to bankrupt on two casinos. You wonder, what was he doing? Was he taking money and directly heating the place with it, like he was shoveling $100 bills into the furnace to heat the whole building, and somehow he's able to do that and still stay in business. He's not laughed out of the room and said, you're the worst businessman of all time. He's able to brand himself as the best businessman of all time. Says that he writes a book called The Art of the Deal. The ghostwriter has come out and said, I wrote the whole thing for him. We spent a few afternoons together and Trump rambled and raved or whatever, and I put that into a coherent narrative. But because a ghostwriter is able to successfully arrange The Art of the Deal for him, he's able to go out there and write one of the best-selling business books of all time. He says it's the best-selling business book. Of course it's not, but it is a popular book. There's no denying that it sold a couple million copies, and it's probably one of the 20 top business books of all time. He's able to brand himself as a business genius. He's able to go out there, and because the company is Trump, and his name's on everything, from casinos to hotels to luxury condos, it's able to look like it's all him. It's really an empire of one. And that, of course, shows that all he really cares about is marketing. Then he looks into the idea of being a TV star on a show called The Apprentice. Now, I used to watch The Apprentice back when it was on TV. I'm embarrassed to admit that, but I didn't watch all the seasons. But about the first 4 or 5 years, I was like, all right, I'm into The Apprentice. Season one, I wanted Omarosa to win. She's my celebrity crush. And I was fully on board with Omarosa winning, but it didn't happen that way. But anyway, every season you would see Trump force these people to scramble on the street and sell his crappy products. And one time he was trying to sell Trump Ice, which was ice cream. And I remember he was like the ice cream business is huge and I want a piece of it. Any business that was out there, he could just put Trump, just slap his name on something and put it out there and people would buy it. That would make him a brilliant businessman. I mean, if he were still in business, he would be all over medical marijuana and legal marijuana. Trump grass or Trump green, all these different crappy products. It's all kind of the same thing. He slaps Trump on top of something that really isn't distinct from anything on the market except his product's probably crappier. Trump ice was probably like frozen asbestos or somehow he made ice cream toxic. He's able to get these people to go out and push a version of ice cream in one episode. In another episode, he was opening a new condo or something. You know, all of it's an endorsement for him and his products. It's all about the Trump ecosystem and building that brand and getting all the money to come back. So NBC's basically giving him paid infomercials for his products and his companies. The winner on The Apprentice is really a loser, because like on Survivor, you get $1 million. On Big Brother, you get $500,000. And The Apprentice, you win a job with Donald Trump, which most people consider to be a punishment. So a job with Donald Trump where he probably berates the shit out of you. Like I made a joke in the last episode. He doesn't call Bill Barr, get in here, give me some McDonald's. He's just all about berating these people that work for him, firing them very quickly. The only people that last around him are hot blondes that remind him of his daughter. And you'd see that in The Apprentice. One of the last seasons that they did with regular people, like non-Celebrity Apprentice version, because eventually they'll go to Celebrity Apprentice version, which is even more of a joke and even more outlandish. And one of the last seasons they did with regular people, there's a guy whose, I think his name was Clint, and he was extremely qualified. He was 100% a hard worker. He would work himself to the bone for Trump. He would do all these things for Trump. And it came down between him and a hot blonde that looked like Ivanka. Now, who do you think got the job at the end of the season? Clint, you've done everything I've asked you. You've excelled in every way. You were almost the perfect person, which is why I've got to give the job to Heather or whatever her name was. And that was the pattern that you'd see on there, was that he was totally picking women based on how they looked. And people said when he managed the Miss Universe pageant, he was constantly pushing the judges not to pick women of color. This is an underrated story, but a lot of the judges said he didn't want someone with too much of an ethnic look. He wanted someone more all-American, which in his mind, all-American means Ukrainian. That was what Eastern European was his version of all-American. That was the women that he would favor and tilt it towards. That's his standard of beauty. You're seeing what I'm saying. He inherits a fortune, gets someone else to write a book for him. He gets NBC to put him as the star of a show that advertises him as the best businessman of all time. And he wasn't supposed to be the host for multiple seasons. He was going to do one season, and then Mark Burnett, the executive producer of Survivor and some other reality shows who made The Apprentice, he says season two will do Martha Stewart or whoever. I think she might have been going to jail at that time and that fell through. But it was going to be different person every season, a different business genius. And basically, I think Trump found a way to put the kibosh on that. I think it was basically like, look at how big these ratings are. If you don't have someone that's a star like I am, the ratings are not going to be as big. And you see this all the way up until he becomes president. Arnold Schwarzenegger took over one season of The Apprentice, and Trump's talking about how bad the ratings are. Let's all pray for Arnold. He seemed to enjoy taunting Arnold Schwarzenegger as a low ratings, low energy host or whatever. I mean, he's the president of the United States and he's interested in what the ratings for The Apprentice will be. One of 10,000 things that would make someone's head explode. But basically, he's able to extend one season into multiple seasons so that he's America's number one business genius. And it doesn't matter that that's not true. It doesn't matter that he's lost money in casinos. It doesn't matter that Goldman Sachs has called him radioactive. Don't loan money to this guy. American financial institutions refuse to loan him any more money because he's such a bad investment. So that's how he gets money from Moscow, financial ties from Moscow, and able to stay solvent, able to be bought and paid for, able to have such a high opinion of Russia all these years. Personally, any man other than him who's had the personal scandals he would have been run out on a rail. You look at actors like Stephen Collins from Seventh Heaven, who was a child molester. Trump might be a child molester. It seems like nobody cares. He goes on The View and says, if Ivanka weren't my daughter, I would be dating her. That is so disgusting. I think Joy Behar at the time even explodes. You're disgusting. You're gross. Nobody really cares. He says this before he runs for president, and then it doesn't barely even come up while he's running for president. He's able to make passes at his daughter. He's able to pass a 10-year-old girl on an escalator and say, I'll be dating her in a few years. If that's Roy Moore at the Gadsden the mall, they call mall security, which they did on him, right? Like mall security is like, yeah, we had to tell Roy Moore quit hanging around here. He's making everybody uncomfortable. So you see this man who the first wife he has and has his first three kids with, he beats her. She alleges spousal abuse in documents. He cheats on her. He eventually gets Marla Maples pregnant. That's the only reason that that marriage ends, is because he gets someone else pregnant. He goes and decides to be with them. Then you have Tiffany's mother, Marla Maples, cheats on her multiple times. That marriage doesn't last so long. He's out the door before it really even gets going. Very, very stingy with child support. Very, very stingy with money. Doesn't want to pay alimony. Pretty good prenup, so he doesn't pay her out a lot once they divorce. Then Melania comes along. She's basically a mail order bride. I mean, there's no sense going around it. A lot of people allege that she was a prostitute before she became a quote-unquote model. They can't find a lot of pictures of Melania's modeling days. They think she was a call girl back in the day, and that's how Trump came across her, because he says he picked her out of a catalog. He's going through a catalog, shopping around, looking at women. He finds her. We can't find this modeling catalog. No one's ever produced any actual modeling photos of her before she met Trump. Just about every modeling job you see, she's got her clothes off. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to shame anybody, but I'm just saying it's a little unusual that the First Lady of America has literally dozens of naked pictures from her modeling days. We almost can't find one with her clothes on. First time we see her with clothes on, she's in Trump's private jet wearing like a thong and a bikini or something. I think it would be safe to say that there's definitely smoke in the idea that Melania might have been a prostitute, because she's very defensive about that. She has threatened to sue anybody who brings it up. She's tried to cover that up a lot. Very, very defensive about it in a way that seems like there's something there, because the Trumps always seem to, the stuff that's the most true about them, that's the stuff they go after the hardest. So his third wife is a possible call girl. He cheats on her with everybody from porn stars to Playboy bunnies. And I'm not trying to re-legislate this. Morality is in the eye of the beholder. I'm not trying to make it sound like his sex life is any of my business. There's 100 reasons not to be for Donald Trump besides his personal sex life. But I'm just saying, in the era of Me Too, any other man, their first wife says he beat her up. Every wife he's ever had, he's cheated on. He's been married to a possible prostitute to make her the first lady. His second wife, he gets pregnant while he's still married to the first one. He's had more than 20 women come forward and accuse him of rape, sexual assault, sexual harassment. It's obvious on The Apprentice that he favors contestants that he wants to fuck. At the Miss America and Miss Universe pageants he owns, he comes into the dressing rooms. Everybody says it makes him uncomfortable. This is a pattern. As he's running for president, a tape leaks where he brags about sexual assault and says, grab him by the pussy. I'm just saying there's a pattern there that if it was anybody else on the planet, it would kill their political chances. There's no way that in this era you would have somebody who's as unaffected by this as he has been. Personal scandal after personal scandal, bankruptcy after bankruptcy, business failure after business failure. He's been sued 3,500 times in civil court. Mark Cuban once made the best argument against him ever when he was on Real Time with Bill Maher. And he says, when you have an actual good businessman like Warren Buffett, people say, I made so much money with him. He mentored me. He taught me so much. I learned a lot from him. I could work for him again. Everybody you see who used to work for Trump or has done dealings with him, he stiffed me. He fucked me. He screwed me over. He didn't pay me. I had to take him to court. He didn't pay this. I ran up a tab. I was his contractor and he stiffed me on the pavements. You just can't find a lot of people who worked with Donald Trump that aren't currently working for his sons that have positive things to say about him. All of this leads me to believe that he made some kind of deal with the devil where he's going to be the luckiest man on the planet for all time. I mean, he's 73 years old. People say, well, he'll get his one day. When's it going to come? Most people who are going to have their comeuppance or are going to have their moral reckoning, it's going to come before they're 2 years away from being dead. I mean, the man scarfs down McDonald's hamburgers and steaks every single day. You see him eating KFC on his private jet. His cholesterol level alone. I mean, you see men who exercise every day and ride bicycles and they drop dead at 65. When's it going to come for Trump? If it was ever going to come, he'd be dead by now. I mean, the man is overweight, chronically obese, eats garbage food all the time. Then the fact that he even inherits his business empire, I guess I left this out, but his older brother, Fred, and what is it with these guys named Freds? Because the Koch brothers had an older brother named Fred, named after their father, and the Koch brothers screwed Fred Koch out of his inheritance, and they got that business empire from him. Trump does similar things where his older brother's an alcoholic. He's not fit to take over the family company, and that's why his father, Fred Trump, kind of gives it to Donald. Even that, you could say, is a pretty lucky stroke. As he's running for president, there's 15 other Republicans. They all drop one by one by one. He's able to weed them out. He's able to overconquer them. And I mean, you're talking about maybe not the strongest Republican field, but I mean, Ted Cruz is a sitting senator. John Kasich is a governor of Ohio. Jeb Bush is the brother of a former president. Chris Christie's the governor of New Jersey. 15 or 16 other candidates. And there's some jokes in there, like Ben Carson, who's one of the strangest presidential candidates I've ever seen. All the joke candidates, like Rick Perry and Ben Carson, Trump eventually hires them to come work for him. They're eventually in the Trump administration. Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham are all sitting senators. Chris Christie, sitting governor. John Kasich, probably the best of the bunch. He's the governor of Ohio, almost certainly would have become president. Voters are like, we don't want them. We don't want Rubio. We want Donald Trump. And it almost seems as though there's no one that can topple him or no one that can take him over in this vast Republican field of candidates that could have beat him. He beats them all out one by one, which is seemingly a miracle because Jeb Bush has this massive campaign fortune. John Kasich has all these purple state credentials. Ted Cruz and Rubio, they're like, oh, we want a more diverse party. They're the future of the party. These are the rising stars. He's able to topple them all over and take them down one by one. Then as he becomes the nominee, everybody and their brother says there's no way Trump can win. Hillary Clinton's the most qualified presidential candidate. She's probably the most qualified presidential candidate you can imagine. At the time she starts running, her approval ratings are above 75%. She's extremely popular. I know people don't like to remember it that way. They'll be like, Hillary, everybody always hated her. After she was Secretary of State and right at the beginning of the race, she's the most popular Democratic candidate in the country. Her approval ratings are extremely high. I think they're higher than Obama's at the time that she starts running for president. No one believes that she's going to lose to this man. They're like, she's the first female president. It's something people, it's overdue. It's something people want. There's a lot of excitement about it. She's competent, she's smart, she's capable. We know the country's going to be in good hands. Let's turn it over to the carnival barker who's bankrupted casinos and been sued 3,500 times in civil court. At the time Trump won the presidency, there's an active case against Trump University as a Ponzi scheme. People signed up learning classes that never happened, never useful in any kind of way. He has to settle that lawsuit, which he never wants to settle any lawsuits, but he settles that one and moves on. As he's running, all this stuff comes up about Hillary, that every email she ever sent is a big federal case, but Trump doesn't release his tax returns. He's been president 4 years. We still haven't seen his tax returns, which is almost incredible that it could be covered up that much. The Russians decide to help him. I'm just saying, there is a case that this is the luckiest man in the history of the world. We've never seen someone be so Teflon and skate so narrowly and even lose the popular vote by 3 million votes. And then because he wins by less than 100,000 in three individual swing states, he becomes president. It almost is seemingly impossible. When people point out, well, the polls were wrong about Trump and Hillary, I don't know that they were wrong because it said that Hillary would beat him by the popular vote. She did beat him. She won by 3 million votes. And so I don't know that polls were supposed to go in and detect, well, she's got to beat him by 10 to be able to become president. But now he's president. He's made a deal with the devil and the bill has come due. And we're seeing literal plagues. Coronavirus has killed 100,000 Americans. We don't know the worldwide death total because I strongly suspect that China falsified their numbers. I think a lot of other countries may not be deliberately falsifying their numbers. But I was talking with my wife and I said, well, you know, you don't see a lot of as many deaths in Africa and South America and the Middle East. She's like, how would we know? In parts of Africa, there's barely any hospitals. So even if people are dying left and right, like if they go to the hospital, they're not going to have coronavirus tests to give these people. So those cases could be dramatically underreported. A lot of South America, Africa, Latin America, parts of Asia, just because would we even know if it was killing people left and right in certain places that wouldn't necessarily have coronavirus tests to even give people? Or people are so rural, they live an hour away from a hospital, a day away from a hospital. They're not getting medical treatments. Honestly, she's got a good point. It's like, how would we even really know what the worldwide death total is? In the United States, we're the highest death total in the world, mostly because we're able to report it accurately. But let's just look inside the United States right now, because you have 100,000 Americans are dead. The economy's in free fall. Bugs. We have Asian murder hornets. We've never had those before, but there's Asian murder hornets that they're capable of killing an entire colony of bees. They can kill a grown man by stinging him. The cicadas are back. In the Southeast, the cicadas have been gone for 17 years. Now they're back all of a sudden. There's a literal riot in Minneapolis, and they're rioting in Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles. They had on the news that several people were rioting in downtown LA last night. There's going to be other cities just because of the video, and also partly due to pent-up frustration with coronavirus and economic turmoil and the fact that a record number of Americans are drawing unemployment. And that hasn't totally been enough, but now they're talking about they're going to get rid of the unemployment. The extra $600, that's set to expire before a lot of people have even gone back to work. Or even if they're going back to work, they still have to try to make up 10 to 12 weeks of missed wages, which obviously that extra $600, that won't even be enough. But it's something. It's more than they've got. But to take that away at this crucial time seems pretty scary. When we look at biblical plagues, literally, you got the bugs, you got the locusts, you got the plagues. As I said, maybe biblically, there's the firstborn child dies. I'm very confused at this new disease in New York that's targeting children specifically, because now kids are coming up dead. And that's scary for me, having two small kids and being a parent myself. And that's another reason that at the time they were talking about reopening the schools in California. They wanted to reopen them and let them go like the last couple weeks, or possibly push it into the summer and let them go. And they canceled that, I think, because of what was happening in New York. They said, we can't do it because children are apparently very vulnerable to this disease. And yet, when you look outside in Los Angeles on Memorial Day, there was parties going on. I could hear at least 20 people in an apartment close to me having a barbecue, talking, laughing, playing. People go to parks. You see on the news, like, massive pool parties, like 200 people. But also, do I think the country will open back up too soon? I absolutely think it opened back up too soon, because you're seeing the numbers spike again, and that's no surprise that the last states to close were the Southeast. They're also the first states to reopen. I've made this point before that a lot of times the politicians just don't care about people's lives. Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, she doesn't care if 10,000 more Alabamians die than would have. I think a lot of people look at this as like, well, it kills old people and sick people, and those are very expensive people to take care of. People on Medicaid, the poor people that get government health insurance, maybe it'll get rid of some of them. And the people on Medicare, that's also taxpayer provided. They thought that it would target a certain number of people, that they were disposable. And I think you saw that in England, most prevalent, Boris Johnson. He didn't seem interested in curbing the virus at all. He says, let's just expose our entire population to it, and that way we can basically be immune. There's no evidence of that. There could be a second wave of the disease that kills just as many people, because they don't know enough about the disease to know that that would prevent anything. Irony of ironies, he almost dies from coronavirus. Like, he has to go to the ICU. Karma's kind of a bitch, because he didn't seem to care that much about the lives of his people. And it would be kind of ironic if he were failed by this disease. But I'm sure that in the back of their minds, I mean, this is a conservative government that England has, very similar to America's government, that is probably tired of all the money going to the National Health Service, which they have universal health care. And they probably looked at it like, well, if the virus mostly kills old people and sick people, that could save us $1 billion in healthcare costs. I'm sure they figured it up on some spreadsheet or tabulated it some way. It all seemed about saving pennies. I do think that's been a calculation of some of the European governments that we don't see be as active to prevent this as they could be. And in the United States, you've seen Trump play favorites with certain states. Certain states get more resources. There's a famous feud between him and the Michigan governor where basically he's talking about medical vendors shouldn't do business there. I mean, it looks like he's targeting Michigan, which is pretty ridiculous because Michigan is a swing state. And you have to think, all this is happening during an election year. He's deliberately comfortable letting people in swing states die. You have to wonder, if he's reelected, how bad could this possibly be? We're seeing the Obama boom economy turn into a bust economy. In the last 100,000 Americans are dead in 100 days. You're talking about 1,000 Americans a day. In 100 days, 100,000 Americans are gone. They're gone. Just like that, they're goners. It's a terrifying time period. And then when you turn on the news and you see, like, the woman in Central Park who, there was a black man who was bird watching and he wanted her to take her dog. And then she goes, I don't have to do anything. And then she calls 911 and lodges a fake police report against this man, crying and talking about he's attacking her and doing stuff. How brazen are people in this era of Trump that they could commit racist acts on video camera? Like, it doesn't even occur to her that it would be the wrong thing to do to make a false police report against a man trying to watch birds. Like, it doesn't even seem, it would bother her if that man got arrested and went to jail and she'd be like, good. I mean, how big a piece of shit do you have to be that something that temporary, a man got on my nerves in the park, let me ruin his life by getting him thrown in jail and having a falsified assault charge against a white woman? How petty can you possibly be? You know, people in LA, they get so mad because people cut them off in traffic, or you've heard stories about, like, somebody honked at me and so I followed them to their house and murdered them or whatever, and you see that on the local news all the time. You have to wonder, what's in this culture that people are ready to kill somebody for nothing? For the drop of a hat, for absolutely, seemingly no reason. They're willing to ruin a man's life because they got into a verbal argument in a park. And I think the fact that that video circulated at about the same time that a cop clearly murdered a man in Minneapolis, you can see where people are like, we've had enough. We're fed up. Black people specifically, they're like, this is too much. We can't take it anymore. We've been disproportionately impacted by coronavirus, especially the tanking of the economy. And then now to have these racist incidents, it just feels like it's too much. And of course, Trump is largely to blame for this. You could see where, if that same situation happened in Minneapolis, Obama could have went out there and he could have given a press conference, and he could have kind of calmed people's fears. And he did this many times. There were many police shootings while he was president. Henry Gates was getting arrested at his own house, and then he had Gates and the police officer come have a beer at the White House. And the white cop looks like he's petulant. He looks like he don't want to be there. He looks like he got called into the principal's office. And you look at that white cop, you think, fuck off. Like, you're some 20-something-year-old dipshit who don't even have a college degree or something like that. You're a young, dumb, full of cum. Arrest a black guy outside of his fucking house. Educated, successful Harvard professor black guy that you felt jealous of. Let's be quite honest. Upper middle class and upper class black people that are getting so mistreated, white people feel resentful towards them. They have a jealousy towards some of these people, and that's fueling a lot of it. Like, who do they think they are? You know, Obama calls him to the White House and is like, let's have a beer, let's talk it out or whatever. And the guy looks like, I don't even want to be there. It's like, the president of the United States is willing to have a beer with you. This is an opportunity most of us would like to have, and especially when you've done nothing to deserve a beer with the president. You fucked up, quite frankly, and you look like you don't want to be there. It's all bubbling to the surface, and Trump is only making this 10 times worse. And I do remember another time when Obama was president, and I think it was right after the George Zimmerman shooting of Trayvon Martin, and he talked about if he had a son, it would look like Trayvon Martin. And I remember right-wingers were mad about that. They were so incensed that he said something about that. And I remember Adam Carolla, it's so outrageous that a president, any president, would say something like that and make it so personal and use it for his own personal gain. He does stuff like that to calm people. When the president of the United States can go out there and talk personally about it, people are less likely to riot. They're less likely to go out there and be like, the president doesn't get it. They don't understand. I'm not being listened to. The system is against me. There's no mechanism for me to air my frustrations legally, so I'm going to burn it to the ground. And people like Adam Carolla, they'll never fucking understand that. They'll never get that. It matters that the president has empathy and can speak with compassion and heart. They are able to let people know, I see you, I hear you, I feel you. Trump is, how dare you ask me to see you? How dare you ask to be heard? They're censoring people on Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to shut Facebook and Twitter down. He's infuriated because Twitter finally fact-checked some of his bullshit. He posted a tweet that was clearly horseshit. Twitter said, do your own research. All they did was put a disclaimer on it. And I think that's more than fair. You know, it's like cigarettes. Put a disclaimer on the box, said this could kill you, and not could, but will, in cigarettes case, but this could kill you. Fake news is the same way. It could kill you. I mean, what happens when Trump goes out there and reports something totally false and people begin to riot? Oh, wait, it's already started to happen. Because during the coronavirus lockdowns, he was like, Democrats, they just want to keep the country shut down. They're trying to kill my reelection chances. They're trying to save the lives of their citizens. But he says they're trying to kill his reelection chances. So he encourages people to go to state houses and riot. And of course, the wrong element shows up. Outside the Michigan State House, people with Confederate flags of all fucking things. You think like, okay, what part of the Confederacy was Michigan in? How are you doing anything helpful at that point? Michigan, because he has a feud with the governor, his angry mob shows up with guns and Confederate flags and talk about reopen the economy so we can all get sick and die. That's what they're fighting for. They're fighting for the right to get sick and die. And they say, well, it's because we're losing a lot of money in the economy. Yeah, but if you reopen the economy too quickly, as is being done right now, and there's a second wave of infections, as is being done right now, what's that going to do for your business and the economy? Keep it closed for another 6 weeks. Make sure you flatten the curve. Make sure that all the coronavirus has, I don't want to say died out, because that's not going to happen until there's a vaccine, but at least petered out, at least dissipated more than it has. But by reopening so quickly and everything, thinking, oh, we'll get all the business back and we'll pretend that nothing's happening and nothing's weird and nothing's going on, that just leads to a second wave of mass infections. And then that just leads to a second lockdown, could be imminent, or no lockdown, but more than 1,000 people a day are dying. 2,000 or 3,000 people a day are dying, and nobody wants to do anything. They're too afraid to leave their house. If you see it go from there's 1,200 people a day getting killed across America to 5,000 people a day dying across America from coronavirus, are you going to want to go to a movie theater? Are you going to want to go buy an ice cream cone? Are you going to want to go to a hotel or on travel or vacation? I know right now a lot of dumbasses don't get it, and they've been cooped up for a few weeks, so they're bored. And because they're bored, they think coronavirus is over. But when you see footage like at a Texas pool party and there's hundreds of people packed into a tiny ass pool, it's almost like, what is wrong with you? Like, how are you not getting that things have changed? And I get frustrated with it. In Los Angeles, a lot of people act like things just haven't changed at all. And it's just really frustrating to see a lot of people be like living, they're out walking their dog and they don't have a face mask on and there's all these people with them or they're going somewhere. Of course, there's another extreme of that. I'm out walking around or something and then I see an old lady practically dive into a bush to get away from me. She's like, oh shit, I don't want that guy to even breathe near me or I'm going to die. That's what I'm saying. It's real strange because it seems like some people are so paranoid that you can't get within 10 yards of them or they'll run away. They'll go in the other opposite direction. And then other people, right beside those people, there's 10 of them and they're having a barbecue and not thinking anything about it. It's strange to have the country in such a weird thing where some people you come up and be like, hey, how's it going in these tough times? Tough times, what's happening? What's unusual? What's different about it? And be like, well, coronavirus. Oh yeah, coronavirus. You know, like it doesn't even impact them that much. And then other people are literally overly paranoid or whatever, but it almost seems like, how can you be at this point when the news is literally all bad? And that's why you see John Krasinski's web series, Some Good News, that's become very popular. And I'm like, I'm sure it is because people like to bury their heads in the sand. They like to pretend that things are not happening. Right now, there's riots going on in Hong Kong. Do you even know about it? Is it even on the news? It's not even being covered that there's riots in Hong Kong. Brazil and Mexico, their death totals are spiking and spiraling. That's not even covered. So you can watch the nightly news and then MSNBC and CNN. And I mean, honestly, the news is so bad in America, they don't even have time to get to the international bad news. They don't even have time to be like, oh yeah, Mexico and Brazil and Russia, they're all experiencing massive spikes in this disease. Russia's economy is in the tank. Hong Kong protesters are at it again because now China's passed a new law basically saying if you talk bad about China, we can charge you with treason and sedition. They're like, hell no, this is exactly what we were writing about in the first place. Then you release coronavirus, then it shut down all the protests. Oh, I guess all the protesters, now that they're under quarantine, they're all going to be sheep again. And they're like, fuck it, we have nothing. Basically, Hong Kong is now going to be considered more and more part of China. America's like, okay, so now Hong Kong, which had special exemptions, some of the regulations and some of the tariffs that we put on China, now we're going to get rid of those. Because if you're saying that it's all one country, then they're going to be treated like China. And a lot of businesses that moved to Hong Kong, they're like, hey, wait a minute, slow down. This was half the reason we moved to Hong Kong, was so to get around some of these things that America was doing. And so now it's like, yeah, it's on again in a major way. And now they're being joined by the protesters in Minneapolis who are setting fire to Target stores. They're going around, they're looting ATM machines. There's fires. I mean, they're showing footage of Minneapolis as though it's the seventh circle of hell. I mean, it's nighttime, there's fires blazing, there's windows being broken, people are going around. It's the worst possible time for a race riot because of coronavirus, because the economy is tanking. But it all seems connected to the fact that we have a president who is either dangerously incompetent or willfully trying to hurt the country. He might like that there's race riots because he might like that people are afraid. He might like that white people look at the angry black mob breaking shit in Minnesota and Los Angeles or wherever else. Oh, you know what? We better turn to the law and order guy. Trump's going to put a stop to this. You would think it would benefit Biden because then it would be like, this will stop if we have a different president. I believe that most of this will stop if we have a different president. I believe he's causing the divisions we're seeing right now. I've said before, the 1960s, those divisions were not created by any one person. There were several assassinations. There were several movements being started. There was the Vietnam War. There was the draft. There was the Southeast had all these Jim Crow laws that desperately needed to be overturned. There were many things going on to create an environment like that. This is mostly Trump that is creating the toxic environment that we're in at this moment. It's one man who benefits when the country is so hopelessly divided. A majority of white people are afraid of minorities and they need to go turn to him because they think he can save them. He may like the chaos, but I could almost see this somehow playing into his strategy because, again, the guy's made a deal with the devil. When people write books, like the original title of this podcast was going to be Trumpocalypse. I figured out that was taken. David Frum wrote Trumpocalypse, or it's coming out soon. And he's right. Rick Wilson wrote Everything Trump Touches Dies. And then the second book, Running Against the Devil. There's a reason that people look at him as a devil or a King Midas in reverse or an Armageddon-like figure. Andrew Sullivan said Trump being elected is an extinction-level event. All feels like hyperbole, but there's a reason that I made two separate videos in 2016 talking about Trump would lead to Armageddon. They were comedic, but the news seems to get worse every single day, and it is one man's fault, and that's desperately why we need to vote him out. And that's why in episode 70, majority of what I'm going to be talking about. Thanks for listening, everybody. I appreciate your time. Stay safe. Please stay safe. I can't afford to lose any listeners. Please stay safe and don't want any of you guys to get hurt.